You're listening to episode 15 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on July 14th, 2008. In this podcast, we'll be exploring the dream interview. I like to think of it as dream interpretation for anarchists, because a huge piece of it involves the fact that nobody else has authority over your dream symbology. Not a single dream dictionary out there published by any New Age company, not Freud, not Jung, none of them have a better idea of what it means to speak in your native dream tongue than you do. And you may not know this, but it's true. You are your own expert. So the dream interview is all focused on mirroring back to you what you're saying so that you yourself can, you the dreamer, can say, right, I got it. I feel it in my bones. I know what that points to. The dream interview process has some jargon associated with it too, and also a couple of caveats. In this episode, I just like to show you a sample dream interview, and maybe in a future one, we can really do a breakdown of what happened. But essentially, as I've blogged about before, many dreams come in three acts, a beginning, middle, and end. Not all dreams, but many dreams. You can look at these three acts as this is what has happened. There, act one, act one is the setting of the stage. Act two is because of what happens in act one, this is what's going on right now. Maybe this is how you're dealing with act one now, and that's act two. And then act three comes and says, and if you did this, this might happen. Or maybe it's even a suggestion to do that. Or an FYI, what will happen if you do that, according to your dream self. And I place a lot of value in what my dream self has to say. So there's a lot of wisdom there. And it's free if you've got a friend to help you out, or if you've worked on this enough that... ideally, you have someone interview you enough that you finally start to piece together your own dream tongue. It becomes easier and easier to do your own dream interview, to interview yourself. That is absolutely the end goal. But always knowing that someone helped you to get there, so you yourself need to help a new generation of dreamers along. Other aspects to the dream interview. One, I owe it in large part. As I blogged about before, much of the format and the articulation of it I owe to Gail Delaney and a good friend of mine, Linda Neal, who has done a tremendous amount of dream work over the past couple decades, and Gail Delaney even more. She has a website and has written many, many books. So... And has had year after year after year of dream circles. Gail is a pretty hardcore dream interviewer and has clocked countless hours doing these and interviewing herself too. So also, in order to really make the most of the dream interview process, you need dreams. Now, for some of you, dreams are just pouring out of you. You carry them around in the daytime. They're so vivid. They stick with you. You're always telling your friends about them. Others of you, it's been a while since you remember your last dream. You may even think you don't dream. which I have to say is highly unlikely, if not impossible. But I won't say impossible, but I'll definitely say it's quite unlikely. And the reason why I say that is because to say that you don't dream, well, that kind of shuts the door on the process. So I'd encourage you to think of it as that you very easily lose memory of your dreams, that the connection between you and the dream world, if indeed you are one of those people who think that you don't dream, is just very tenuous, and it just evaporates upon waking. And there are methods of capturing those dreams and of reforging that connection. And at another time, I can talk more about them. But the most straightforward and simple method is to keep an open journal, not a closed journal, but a journal that is already open to the right page with the date already written and a pen sitting on it next to your bedstead. So when you wake, that you can just... Or maybe you don't even wake, but when you have a dream, you can cast about with your hand, scramble to find that pen, and scribble your dream down, whatever you remember. I've done that many times when the light's not even on and the handwriting looks pretty funky. But you know what? It happens to many of us that we just get into places where you have a hard time remembering your dreams, and you really have to do whatever you can to pull some of them out. And if that means scribbling in the dark half-remembered thoughts. Oh, and that's the other thing, is that even a flash, even a single image is worth writing down, especially if you're having a drought of dreams. And you probably won't believe me, because I didn't believe it. But you know what? Many times... I've gone ahead and written that image down thinking it was nothing and kind of annoyed at it. And then later on I've looked at it and it's been incredible, just incredible what came out of that single little image. One that actually I'm kind of having deja vu. I wonder if I've mentioned it before on a podcast was, a single image that I had while falling asleep, actually. And that's these images can happen at those times too, of these words written across the sky, a souvenir of sleep to a slave's Bible. And whatever those words would mean in your native dream tongue, and mine, it meant that I was collecting dream interpretations, but I wasn't... of my own dreams, but I wasn't doing anything with them. I wasn't implementing them into my life, and that I needed to stop treating them like souvenirs and start using them. And you can imagine having that written down in my journal, and I look at it, and it hits me that there's another souvenir of sleep. it's like a self-referential thing, you know, do not read this sentence kind of thing, a souvenir of sleep written right there in my journal. So yes, we covered acts, we covered getting your dream journal going. It also helps to have a dream group, really, really helps. And, I'll cover maybe in another podcast more on how you might be able to do groups. There's also Gail Delaney's books are a resource. I mean, she's great. I mean, use her. She's done a lot of these things. Done many, many great dream interviews and dream groups, and has lots of great suggestions. But most importantly is doing it and then using the wisdom you get out of it. Now, in this episode, I grab Penny Scout, the famed Penny Scout, who is fantastic about certainly having dreams that are vivid and memorable and that stick, and also about writing them down. So she's the best of both worlds. And when I asked her to do this podcast, I think she even had a little bit of performance anxiety about, and then maybe dreamt a little less, so had a harder time pulling dreams out of her sleep over the past week. But she certainly brought a great one that she had just had the night before she came, and we did our dream interview process. And I almost just want to dive right into it, but I do want to say, and maybe I'll say some comments after the dream is over. This is going to be an enormously long podcast, I suppose. It might reach upwards of almost 2 hours. But I really don't want to edit down the back and forth between me and Penny Scout, because I want you, as the dream starts, I want you to know that as an interviewer, I never know what's going on. I never know if it's going to stick. I never know if what I'm saying is useful or not, if the questions I ask are going to go anywhere, because it's all up to, in this case, Penny. Penny Scout is the authority. I know nothing. I'm just a mope with a mirror in my hand, reflecting back what she says. Literally. All I can do is ask questions, and use our own words back to her, reflect them back. And you'll hear me do a lot of that. Another thing I'm doing during the dream interview is writing. We each have a copy of her dream and double spaced so I can take notes. And I'm writing down the words she's using. Now, in some future ideal reality, you'd simply just remember the language she uses and the words she uses and just keep bouncing those back to her. But, you know, we're again, resurrecting spoken tradition requires some baby steps. And so our baby step is writing it down. So with that, let's just get started. And Penny is just going to start reading from her dream.
Peter and Sean are running an adult survival camp at a campground. I walk down to a parking lot where they're hanging out with the campers. They've already stayed there one or two nights. I notice that Sean has been creatively using the dumpster as his shelter. The campers are enjoying the camp so much, and not very many of them have to go home, so they've all decided to extend the camp another day. One guy, who looks like a kid from work, stands up and protests that he's very dirty because he hasn't showered in 2 days and he's been sleeping in the dumpster. I suggest that he go swimming, and some others nod in agreement. He says there are signs on the beach that say it's closed because the water is too dirty. I ask if he means the beach at the little campground lake or the Allegheny Reservoir. He says yes, the reservoir is closed too. But I look out and can see the reservoir in the distance, and there's tiny figures swimming in it. I pointed out, saying that maybe just some of the main beaches are closed. So we begin a scout game. The leader says we have 3.5 seconds to hide and begins to explain the rules, but people are already hiding to get a head start as he's talking. Comically, they are all found huddling in the same place behind this shed like a bunch of scared chickens. But meanwhile, the leader has changed his mind and decided that for the first round, we'll have 3.5 minutes to hide. I'm pretty stoked because we're in Pennsylvania, a campground that I've been to many times in dreams before, and I know the area well. There's some cool secret spots that I could run to in 3.5 minutes and never be found. Some girl at the camp asks if there are any beagles around. Apparently they would be useful for this or another game. I say, yes, there are usually beagles over there. And we begin walking in the direction of the woods where the game is to begin, as well as the beagle training field. There are many people playing lawn games in the field, like horseshoes, and another game that involves throwing a whole bunch of plastic rings. I'm running or walking quickly to get to the forest and trying to dodge them, but plastic rings are bouncing off of me. And that's what I remember.
Awesome. All right. So what we're going to do is start a piece by piece and just plod through it. So what I always do is start with the place where it happens in the dream, the setting. So the scene goes down at a campground. You say you've been there before in a dream. So tell me about this campground. I've never been there. I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well, this campground It wasn't anything familiar when the dream started, but then it turned into like a family sort of campground. And in other dreams I've had, I don't know if that matters, but like in other dreams I've had, my parents ran the campground, or the campground borders national forest, so I can kind of like sneak in and out of it. So that's what I know about the campground.
Okay, what kind of how does it feel when you're at the campground? What is the feeling of the campground?
I definitely like the campground. It feels like a place that I'm familiar with, and I know where different plants are, or different like good places, flat places to sleep. It's a good familiar feeling at the campground.
All right. Oh, so what? To really nail it down. So, what would you say that your relationship with that campground is? Since you experience it in your waking life, what is your relationship with it?
Well, it's kind of an amalgamation of different campgrounds, but well, growing up, we used to go camping at campgrounds, not big RV sort of campgrounds, but kind of smaller ones, but still the kind that other people roll their eyes at and say, why would you go camping at a campground when you could go to out in the woods? But, you know, I have these fond memories of it, so I'm kind of pro campground. I think it's a good, fun thing for people who aren't going to go all the way.
Oh, okay. So it's an amalgam of campgrounds. Okay. All right. The first people that you mentioned are Peter and Sean. So tell me who Peter is. I've never met him. I don't know anything about him.
Peter is my boyfriend. He teaches primitive skills and runs a website on those sort of topics, and he's very passionate about rewilding.
All right, so what kind of what sort of person is he besides like his interests? Like if he was a type of person, how would you describe him to someone else who was like curious about his personality? Or
let's see, Peter is he's sensitive. He's smart. He's paranoid sometimes.
Yeah, that's good. So now try Sean. Tell me about Sean.
Okay. Sean, it's a little bit easier because he's not my boyfriend. I think of Sean as a sort of easygoing, creative type guy. He makes crafts. He's very crafty, and he gets things done.
Have Peter and Sean work together to actually run a survival class in real life? Yeah. Okay. You're nodding yes. Okay. So so that's good to write down. So I'm writing all the words Penny is using. You say so that's at the campground. You walk down to a parking lot where they are all hanging out with the campers. They've already stayed there one or two nights. So they're hanging out with the campers. How? What's the what feeling and that as you approach that scene amongst all those folks?
I'm just coming down to see what's up. I'm not really excited. I'm not really scared. I'm just approaching them to curious, I guess, see what they're doing.
Okay, so you're curious. And then you say, I noticed that Sean has been creatively using the dumpster as his shelter. So what is a dumpster? I am from another reality. I've never heard of a dumpster.
A dumpster is where people put all of their things they don't want anymore. And they're usually pretty dirty and sticky and smelly. But there's also a lot of good stuff in the dumpster because people throw away a lot of useful items just because they're stupid. And I believe this dumpster was empty. I think he was just using the roof part of it, the metal part, for a shelter.
Oh, so he's using a piece of a dumpster. Oh, okay. Just
it
like
was the whole dumpster, but he was using it for shelter.
Uh-huh.
Just because it would keep the rain off.
Okay. Okay, so what I'm going to try and do now is called a bridge question. So I think we have enough information here that we can like explore a little bit. Now, I'm going to ask it in a bunch of different ways, but essentially what I'd like to know is there a place in your waking life nowadays where or recently where there are two people you know. Oh, you know, I never asked what an adult survival camp is. That seems like an important question. Tell me just before I ask the bridge question, tell me about what an adult survival camp is. I've never even heard of one. So.
Okay. It's a camp for, age 16 and up or so, where they go and learn various primitive skills like fire making and collecting food and water for various reasons, some people for fun, some people for emergencies. This camp seemed like a lot of fun. It had more of the feel of the A-team camp, actually, than a survival camp.
What was that feeling?
Games and having fun. I mean, that's why in the dream they decided to extend the camp another day because they were having so much fun.
So, is there a place in your waking life where there are two people who are both into primitive skills and they are enjoying themselves, having games and fun in the woods? And a place that is familiar, and it's a good place. It feels good to be there. It borders national forest. Is there a a place you, is there a situation you know of where that's going on in your waking life?
Well, in real life, Peter and Sean did teach a survival camp. Also, Peter and Brian taught a survival camp, which I went to visit them just like in the dream. And although the dream took place in Pennsylvania, I'm fairly familiar now with the Molalla River corridor where they were having this camp in real life. And I also, I was trying to explain actually to one of my friends on the phone the other day that although I'm living in Oregon, the pattern language of the woods is similar. There's the same kind of dirt roads through it. There's the same, you know, differences in vegetation. And so it feels familiar in that way. And the Molalla River Corridor does border a larger wilderness area, just like this campground borders a national forest in the dream.
All right. So, well, that sounds like a sort of a yes. So is there a place in your waking life where there's a person who's creative and crafty and easygoing, who's using something where normally people he's using a space where normally people throw what they don't want, it's a dirty, sticky, smelly kind of place, but he's creatively using it for a shelter to keep the rain off. Is there a place in your waking life where that's going on?
That kind of describes our motorhome. it's a little bit of a dump, and I've been trying to find creative ways to fix it up, thinking how can I don't have any money to spend on buying nice lawn chairs, nice pots for my plants, so I have to figure out how to make it look nice in the cheapest way that I can, which involves stealing plastic pots and all this other stuff.
All right, great. That's so, you can't see on the podcast, but of course when that clicked for Penny, her face lit up and it became really funny and giggly. And so that's a good first sign for me as a dream interviewer. I'm always looking for, you know, that sign of like a click. Let's see. So that's so the campers are enjoying the camp so much, and not very many of them have to go home, so they all have decided to extend the camp another day. One guy who looks like a kid from work stands up and protests that he's very dirty because he hasn't showered in 2 days and has been sleeping in the dumpster. Well, you know, there's a situation going on here where I guess what I'm going to try again to get a sense for, what's going on, because I noticed that though you said the motorhome clicks for the dumpster as a shelter, there's this whole camp going on around. And so that makes me more curious about what exactly is overall happening in this first scene. So is there a situation in your waking life where you've already you're staying somewhere in a situation where you're having games and fun, you're teaching and learning primitive skills with people who are passionate about rewilding, and it's going on around your motorhome. Maybe you've already stayed in your motorhome for a while, but and you're enjoying yourself
so much that you're deciding to extend staying there, or well, you know what? I'm going to let that go, because does that make shooting any sparks for you? I have an idea where to go with the next thing, so.
Well, it makes sense in that I've been dabbling and teaching more about plants, and I've said several times that I wanted to get out of working at the garden. I work at a ornamental garden. I've said several times I want to get out of working there and into teaching more hands-on directly. So, and so I did do a class at our house, basically, with Peter's camp. They came over to the motorhome, and I made them dinner one day, and another day I took them on a plant walk. So that makes sense. And it's also really funny that I described the dumpster as sticky, because I just spilled honey in the motorhome the other day, and Peter's been yelling at me about it.
Well, and that's perfect. I mean, that's how cool our dream minds are. I mean, they're awesome. They're like, they got all that stuff covered. So yeah, that's cool. And that's why it was so important for me to stay with your words when you described the, I wrote down dirty, sticky, smelly when you described the dumpster. So, okay. And you know what? I'm going to, the next thing that's going on, that I'm going to try out is so not many of go home. So they've all decided to extend the camp another day. One guy who looks like a kid from work stands up and protests that he's very dirty because he hasn't showered in 2 days and has been sleeping in the dumpster. So tell me about this guy. I've never met him. Could you just sum him up? What kind of person is he like?
This kid from work's kind of somebody who I've only seen briefly. He's a youth conservation corps student, and he's only going to be there for a few weeks. He's just tall and blonde, and all I know is he likes fishing, basically. I'm in charge of these kids, so I tell him what to do, but I don't know anything about him. I've only worked with him once.
Okay, youth conservation. He stands up and he protests that he's very dirty because he hasn't showered in 2 days and has been sleeping in the dumpster. You suggest that he goes swimming, and some others nod in agreement. So, so is there a situation in living in this dirty, sticky, smelly place where there's lots of creative games and fun, there's teaching going on, where there's someone who has stood up and protested, even though they're maybe someone who's in your life briefly or only been there briefly, but they protested that they are very dirty because they haven't showered in 2 days, and because they've been sleeping in a dirty, sticky, smelly place. And does that trigger anything?
I can't think of anything like anybody who's just been in my life briefly recently. I mean, Peter complains about the motorhome on and off, and living in Malala, or wanting to move from away from the parents' house, but that's all I can think of that relates.
Okay, no, that's cool. That's cool. So tell me about hasn't showered in 2 minutes. You know, you can tell me, what is showering? That's interesting you choose that instead of a bath or anything. Tell me about showering.
Showering. Some people shower a lot, a couple times a day. I don't shower that often. I only shower every couple days. Peter thinks I'm dirty all the time because I work in the garden and I'm always covered in dirt. He likes it when I'm fresh and clean. But yeah, I'm a pretty dirty person overall myself. So I was kind of looking at this kid like, whatever, no big deal. If you really have a problem with it, go swimming or shut up.
Well, that's really wild. 'Cause sometimes it can be that a person in your dream is a part of yourself. So there's all kinds of like role reversals going on. So, okay. So what is swimming then?
Swimming is something people do for fun or to cool off. I don't go swimming that often because I don't really like the cold water anymore. Like I used to before I got all, I don't know, adrenally fatigued and don't like stress. But this was swimming in the reservoir, actually, which is warmer than the river. And I was just complaining the other day that I miss swimming in water that's not glacial.
Huh, all right. So it's in the reservoir. So there's signs on the beach that say it is closed because the water is too dirty. So what does it mean when a beach is closed because the water is too dirty?
Well, where I lived in Pennsylvania, up at Lake Erie, it was often closed, the beach, because the E. coli count was too high or some such thing. Too much pollution in the water. So, yeah, that's kind of what was happening in this stream. Dirty with sewage or chemicals or something.
So is there a situation in your waking life where either someone you know or a part of yourself, an aspect of yourself, is protesting that they're very dirty because they haven't showered in 2 days? And that you've suggested that either this person or this part of yourself go swimming, which is something that you used to do to cool off, but you don't do so much now. Ah, okay. How about this? So there's either a person or a part of you who's very dirty, and you suggest that they go do something that you used to do to cool off, but you don't do anymore because it stresses you out, and because of your health issues of adrenal fatigue. And it could be any part of that. Maybe it's just, you know, something that you used to do that you don't do anymore because it stresses you out. And maybe the nearby opportunity to do it is not possible because the water, because there's too much pollution nearby. But in the distance, where it's much easier and more pleasant, that it is possible. How are we doing? That doesn't look like it's triggering anything.
Not specifically. There's lots of things that I used to do that I don't enjoy so much anymore. I can't think of anything that really relates to the pollution part. Or, you know, maybe it's not me. Because my attitude in the dream was kind of like, I don't really, it was almost like I saw those other people swimming and I was like, no big deal. I don't care that the water's dirty. Those people don't care. Look, even if they saw the signs, they're still swimming. So I bet it's okay. Because I'm fairly liberal with my whatever the opposite of a germaphobe is. I'm that. I eat plants from the side of the road or things that have been sprayed, pesticides sprayed right beside them. But I know other people like never want to go foraging here in Portland because it's too dirty.
All right. Well, I wish I had asked you. I think I made a little bit of a mistake in not asking more about the kid from work, because I think that'd help us out here. So I'm going to bug you a little bit more about that kid. And just so I can get some of your own words out about the kid. So, I mean, what is it? You said that they were Conservation Corps. They're briefly there. Tell me more. What is it to be that kid? You know, tell me more about that kid. What kind of situation are they in at that job? Just tell me a little bit about their situation as a personality who might show up in your dream.
Okay. The kids from the Youth Conservation Corps are like generally troubled teens in some way or low income families, and they are given this job to get job experience for future jobs, but that also means they're kind of like, they're there, they kind of want to be there, but they don't really want to be there. They can be kind of lazy. But this kid did an okay job. The kids that I was working with this day were fine, and they kept looking at their work and saying, oh man, we made a big difference today. It feels good. So that's all. I mean, the dream, it was just kind of inconsequential. Like, he just kind of looked like this kid. I didn't really think about it. There's no real personality to him except for the fact that he was kind of whining that he was dirty.
So, but he was definitely one of those kids from that day.
I think so.
Okay. So, in your waking life, is there someone or an aspect of yourself who, protesting that is there some aspect of yourself or someone who's kind of whiny, and to you it's no big deal, and so you suggest that they go do something to uh, that uh, that
that is that to you just seems obvious and that is fine. And and that this person responds that they can't because it's closed to them, and because of there's too much pollution, or and then you look out, and to you it does, you don't see a problem with it. It seems totally doable. You don't understand what the hang up is.
I don't know. I feel that way a lot of the time. I feel more laid back than other people about certain things, but
okay, that's fine. If it's not popping anything, we can move on.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, we'll just move forward. Although I should probably ask about the reservoir a little bit more before we move forward. So the Allegheny Reservoir, you mentioned a couple times. Go ahead and remind me. So what's up with the Allegheny Reservoir? I've never been there. Don't know anything about it.
It's just this big reservoir where I grew up, super huge. Everybody goes swimming there. We had a sailboat there growing up. It's kind of like the middle of my, what in Pennsylvania I would consider my territory, that I knew, the land that I knew well. The reservoir is kind of like smack in the middle.
Okay. And out and you can see. So is there a place in your, I've got to ask this because you said some cool stuff there, in your waking life where somebody's whining about, they're whining and you suggest that they go do something that that you used to do a lot of, but maybe you don't do so much anymore, and they respond by saying they can't because it's closed to them, because there's too much pollution. And you ask if they mean what is nearby, or a place that is in the middle of your territory. That is a place where is that knocking anything? Sort of. Place that is huge.
Well, I do remember one night, or Peter was saying, "I hate it in Malala because." He says, "I hate living here." And I say, "Why?" And he says, "Because my parents are crazy." They better not listen to this. and, you know, I say, "Where would you like to go?" And he says, "I'd like to be in Malala, but more towards the woods." And I say, "Well, I'd like to be there too. Obviously, that's a nicer, cleaner area. I wish our motorhome was in the middle of a meadow and not beside a house." So I guess that's what it's most reminiscent of.
Yeah, okay. So, so it's you begin a scout, or all of you begin a scout game, and the leader says you have 3.5 seconds to hide and begins to explain the rules. So what is a scout game?
Well, games that teach stealth, I guess. This is a particular scout game that Brian was teaching at A-Team camp, in which these kids hide. Person stands in the middle, closes their eyes, counts a certain number of seconds. The kids run away and hide in the bushes, and whoever the person who's standing there can still see is called out. And then the people who are remaining get another round. They get another chance to move, and they try and get closer to the person. And whoever can get closest to the person without that person seeing them and calling them out is the winner. So you have to be good at camouflage and good at hiding. And that was this particular scout game that was going to be played, more or less, except it kind of was combined with a game of hide and seek once it got into the 3.5 minute territory.
And who was the leader? Do you remember who was the leader?
I feel like that was a person who looked like another person from work, just this random maintenance guy who he's kind of new. I don't know anything about him either, except he drives around in a cowboy hat. He smiles and waves. He's friendly. It's just sort of a, it's like I can barely remember, but as a stockier figure, definitely Peter and Sean were totally out of the dream after the first scene. And then they were never really in it again that I remember. Is this other guy was leading it. It definitely wasn't Brian. It was some stranger, but maybe looks like this guy, other guy from work.
All right. Okay, so so 3.5 seconds to hide. That's kind of interesting rules. So what are rules to a game?
Rules to a game are how to play it so everybody understands and that makes the game happen. If they don't follow the rules, the game won't work, even though a lot of times people hate rules. Rules for games are what make the game fun, because otherwise it wouldn't work and you wouldn't be able to play the game.
And then you say people are already hiding to get a head start as he is talking. So is there, I think that we got a little chunk of stuff here. We can try a bridge question. So is there a place in your waking life where you are, oh, I imagine the leader was the person standing in the middle. Is that was? Okay, we're like throwing a microphone back and forth. Okay, so the leader is the one. Well, that's interesting. The leader is the one who's, okay, explained the rules and is standing in the middle. So is there a place in your waking life where you are playing with your skill at not being seen, but still being getting as close as you can, where you maybe you're hiding a little bit, and that even as somebody is telling you how to play, how it works, that you're already getting a head start as they're explaining that you're before someone has finished explaining how to make it fun and how to make it work, you're already getting a head start.
Well, it reminds me of at work. I've started working these 10-hour days, and after a certain amount of time, I'm the only one there. And even while I'm at work, nobody's really supervising me. So I'm always like kind of finding these ways to do what I want to do at the same time that I'm trying to appear that I'm doing my work by weeding and doing whatever I have to do to keep my job. I also find a lot of creative ways to spend my time in ways that satisfy me more, like taking home plants that I want to grow or collecting medicinal herbs or just talking on the phone at the same time as weeding and trying to do that without anybody seeing me and saying, but Emily's always on the phone, she's not working, you know. So that's kind of what that reminds me of.
All right, I'll take that. next you say, comically, they're all found huddling in the same place behind this shed like a bunch of scared chickens. So they, does that include you?
I think that I kind of started to run away first when everybody else started to run away, but I didn't even get to, I wasn't hiding behind the shed. I was just kind of like standing there laughing at the people behind the shed, and because it all happened very quickly. You know, they all start hiding and then realize that he's not done talking or whatever. He changes the rules, so we all come back out. So by the time that everybody was like coming back out from their hiding place, I hadn't even hidden yet, actually.
All right. So it's not even, so I jumped the gun a bit there. It's not even that you necessarily went and ran ahead with everybody else to get a head start, that that you were waiting to more fully understand the rules. Is that right?
Yeah, I was a little bit lazier than other people who were at home.
Okay. Lazier. That's a fun word. I'm writing that one down. Okay, so tell me about the shed. What is a shed, and what is this shed?
I wrote shed. It could have been any building. I mean, we were still in the parking lot at this point, so it was almost like when you have a campground parking lot and there's one of those pit toilets in the brown square shed-like building. It could have been one of those, or it could have been a shed. It's just a building that was the only thing around. Since we were in the parking lot and we only had 3.5 seconds to hide, there was really nothing to hide behind except this obvious shed wall.
You know, that's awesome. I'm looking, and I didn't even ask at the beginning of the dream what a parking lot is, and that, so. And to ask, is there a place in your waking life where there's you're creatively using a dirty, stinky, sticky, smelly place in a parking lot as a shelter? That really makes the motorhome pop out, doesn't it? But we're still in that parking lot, and okay, so
All right. So is there a place in your waking life where though other people are getting a head start as how to play and work is being explained to them, you're lazier than others way is actually makes it so that you don't end up looking as comical as others who are like a bunch of scared chickens.
That reminds me of work too, because there's these other people, and again, hopefully nobody from work listens to this, that in particular there's this one person that I don't really like. She's a real perfectionist. She's always she makes me look bad, basically, because we started at the same time, and she keeps her little cubicle all organized and all her notes all in this file folder with the tabs labeled, and her handwriting's perfect, and all her work that she does is perfect, and she's actually, you know, she's been into work on her days off and been up all night worrying about the rose garden, and she's a germaphobe, which I told you how I feel about that. And the other people at work, I've told this to people in real life, like, I think there's me and about one other guy who kind of don't really give a shit about the garden itself, and we're there to work. And then everybody else takes it very seriously, and to me that's just comical, in that it's, you know, if the economy goes down, they're building this new resort at the garden costing millions of dollars, and you know, that's where all our income's coming from, and who knows if that's going to last, but everybody, you know, is running around working like it's always going to be there, and even if it is going to be there, you know, I don't care about the same things that other people care about. I don't think that growing this ornamental plants is the best use of our work and time, when people could be growing food and building community and all that good stuff, and all that rewild type stuff, as opposed to the civilization type stuff, which the other people obviously don't get.
Oh, that's sweet, because that's making this dream really make a lot of sense. Hey, do you remember how much that resort is going to cost? How many millions? I kind of wonder.
I have no memory for numbers, but...
All right. Well, if...
maybe my dream memory.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I would look that up. It is so... Because my next question is definitely, is there anything at work where you deal with the 3.5 of something? I mean, because it's not 3.5, it's 3.5.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty...
3.5. It doesn't ring a bell.
I wish we could do... like. Can we do like a web search? You think that they would have it online? I just want to kind of cheat on this. Because if I can say...
care about how much you know, things cost. I just don't remember numbers. Somebody asked me the other day how many rooms the resort is going to have, and I said a lot.
Yeah, all right. That's a good answer. All right. So, okay, but I'm definitely so. Do you too see that with there's this issue of someone is a there's an issue of people who are taking things too seriously, and they're all taking off running like a bunch of scared chickens, and meanwhile, as the situation changes, you're being lazier than others. It's allowed you to look a lot less comical, in spite of maybe how organized they think they are and how seriously they're behaving, and you feel pretty stoked about that. Is that and that you feel like you know this area well, this situation well, and is that all kind of click together? Or?
Yeah.
That just makes sense in the terms of me. I mean, the scared chickens part is sort of like when we call people sheeple. Like, yeah. The other people at work are the sheeple or the scared chickens, because they're just all chickens, kind of follow each other around. They don't like to be separated so much. So that's kind of all these people were hiding behind the same shed, the same place. And I'm, you know, out here in my job, just knowing that I'm not going to be there forever and just not taking it so seriously. And it's worked out fine. I haven't gotten reprimanded. I'm getting a raise. So, it's all, I'm ahead of the game in that, I'm not trying as hard, and it works out for me personally, because I don't have that much time working 40 hours a week. So any time that I can insert my personal interests into when I'm at work is a good thing.
That's funny. You just said you're ahead of the game. Did you do that on purpose? Ahead of the scout game. That's awesome. So then the next thing is to ask. Yeah, that 3.5 minutes thing is killing me. Is there a? Well, no. That's getting away from the dream. You definitely have to tell me about that, though. I don't care about anything else. But 3.5. I got to know 3.5. What are beagles? Tell me about beagles.
I don't know why beagles. Because I had that other dream that I told you about where a carp was tickling a beagle's belly. That was a while back. But in this dream, the beagles had to do with the scout game. And I think it's because beagles are hound dogs, so people take them hunting. And hunting and scout games go together. We had a beagle growing up who was actually very fat and not a good hunting dog or scout dog at all. But these beagles in the dream were thin, and they're being trained in some way to be good dogs.
All right. Okay. So, so you say some girl at the camp asks if there are any beagles around. Do you remember the girl?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. I kind of got that. Okay. All right. I love the beagle training field. So is there a situation in your life? Maybe I'll go ahead and try this. So maybe you're at work and there's that whole game that you're playing there, but maybe there's another situation in your waking life where people are being trained to hunt and to be trained to be good at another game, so to speak. And you begin, you and another girl, whether it's a part of yourself or an actual person, you start moving in that direction of woods, moving in the direction of the woods where the game is to begin. Does that do anything, as well as the place where all the training is happening?
I think that brings it more back around to the beginning of the dream and me wanting to get away from working in the garden and moving into teaching and doing these stints at the A-team camp and talking about teaching more. And I do remember the girl, I think, had dark hair, which I have dark hair. Some other people we know, like Jan and Lisa, have dark hair.
Now you're totally getting me excited here. Yes, we only have a couple more sentences to go. This is, yeah, you double space these dreams. They look a lot longer than they are. So there are many people in the field playing lawn games such as horseshoes, and another game involves throwing a whole bunch of plastic rings. There are many people in the field playing lawn games such as horseshoes. So what is, tell me about this horseshoes game.
Horseshoes, I'm not a person who's really into games like that, but I'm not really a game person, but horseshoes is kind of non-threatening to me. I could go for a game of horseshoes every now and then. Other games like badminton or croquet would inspire a lot more anxiety than horseshoes for me. Yeah, and horseshoes, and this was an element in the dream, are hard and big, and you don't want to be hit by a horseshoe. And so I was actually, you know, running or walking by as these horseshoes were being thrown, and I think that kind of flew through my mind, but I didn't get hit by a horseshoe. But I did get hit by the plastic rings.
All right. That's really funny. So is there a place in your waking life where there was a non-threatening game where things were being thrown or things were flying through the air that were that you didn't want to be hit by, or maybe that people playing the game wouldn't want to be hit by those things? And maybe some of those were hard and big and others were plastic.
I mean, there's the paintballs, but I would consider paintballs more of a threatening game. I didn't want to play paintball. So even though the paintballs are plastic rings, sort of plastic circles anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure how that all relates, but that definitely reminds me of kind of the paintball game in the A-team camp.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I wouldn't necessarily try and push that to be paintball, even though it seems like it wants to go, you know, it could go there, but yeah, it's got to make sense according to what makes sense to your dream self. So Was the plastic rings a non-threatening game that was didn't give any anxiety?
Yeah, the plastic rings also, I mean, it reminded me of some kind of native hoop game, which is interesting because all the skills that I'm talking about are kind of native skills that I'm more interested in teaching. I was kind of headed past all these games, so, you know, I would play with horseshoes or I would play with plastic rings, but I wanted to get to the woods.
All
right. That's kind of cool. All right, so starting all the way at the beginning. Is there a place in your waking life where you and where an easygoing, creative, crafty person and your boyfriend are I'm going to get really lazy about this, living in a dirty, sticky, smelly shelter in a parking lot where one troubled youth speaks up in protests that and whines, and your solution, your suggestion is to go do something that'll give them relief, that'll wash it off, the whininess, and you and in response to their further protest that they can nearby because the things are closed and the water is there's pollution and that you say, well, why not you encourage them to go somewhere where just where not the main places, but somewhere else, the place you think that is the middle of your territory that is huge. And now what's so is that all clicking with what we are already? I mean, I don't need you to.
Yeah.
It's still making sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the what I would say is that's act one. You know, that's kind of pretty much act one of this dream, because then it really changes and a scout game starts. And in this game, so this is where somebody is explaining the rules, but people in a scramble to succeed at the game and to get a head start comically follow each other like a bunch of scared chickens. And where you, though a person could think of it as being lazier than others, it pays off because you're ready for when the rules change, and you feel pretty stoked to be where you're at, and that there are some cool secret spots where you could never be found, and either a girl or a part of yourself might ask if there's any place where people being trained to hunt and being trained to be good at skills useful for another game, even though it'd be useful for this game too, it looks like they'd be useful for another game also. And you say yes, and that there are usually it's happening over there, and you begin walking in the direction of the woods where it's all going to begin, as well as where everybody's being trained, and to get away and you use the words to get away from working in the garden and walking towards teaching in the woods, maybe. And though there's on the way there, there's games going on that are non-threatening and they don't cause anxiety. But you're headed past and you're actually you're dodging those games a little bit because you're going right quickly to get to the forest. Now, here's the thing. That's kind of act three, when that girl pops up and says, hey, so here's what can happen a lot. Act one can be, hey, this is the situation, and this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Act two can be, and this is your current way of going at it. And then act three is, but this is what comes next. This is what you either need to do next, what you're going to choose next, and this is what will happen because of it, or, you know, that kind of thing. So if this all, does this all click for you so far?
Yeah, that definitely clicks for me, because just all of it about, you know, wanting to, well, a big question on my mind lately has been, what's next? If I do quit my job at the garden after a little while, and we do stop living at Peter's mom's driveway, where are we going to go next? And it seems like the woods are the familiar territory that feels clean and good is the, you know, the right place to go. And these games are kind of like doing these camps with Trackers Northwest or whatever, are kind of a non-threatening thing to do in between, but or even to get to the woods, but the idea, what I really want is just to be there and not be involved with, you know, Trackers Northwest and the games and the camps and all that.
That's sweet. And you know, since we're, so normally what I would do is I would encourage you, look, so part of doing all of this is you're starting to learn your dream language. So beagles, I think what we're learning, what beagles mean in your native tongue, in your dream tongue. Right. And you say this has happened, but, you know, you've dreamt about beagles before. And so another, so there's lots of little details to chase down if for just for your own benefit, if you want. I am noticing, too, that I didn't really ask, like, about the plastic rings. And we could say it's paintball, but, you know, why don't we look at it? Because I noticed that you're, that plastic rings are bouncing off of you in the final sentence. So what are these plastic rings?
I don't know. This game that people were playing, let's say there was a guy, one youth, throwing these rings, and he threw them out, and they landed in a certain pattern, and I don't know how the game was played after that, but it had to do with the pattern, and it just reminds me of, like, these native games where you, hoops and spears, where you throw out the hoops and you try and get your spears in them, and the, you know, they're aim hunting improvement sort of games.
So, do you feel like that there's a situation in your waking life where either it could happen or it is happening that there's a plastic version of native games that you're trying to dodge, you know, in order to get right to the forest? Maybe like a, that it's, does that do anything at all?
Yeah, I don't know. It could just be the way that, you know, the skills that we practice or whatever, basket making and blah, 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 are kind of, they can be useless out of context. And, you know, in a real situation, I'm kind of most concerned, you know, with making a living, and that, you know, just, it doesn't matter to me if I know how to build a shelter. If the world is full of shelter materials, I don't necessarily need to know how to build the perfect authentic shelter. That's something Peter and I have discussed a lot of times, and, you know, it's nice to know
how to do things, the totally, you know, by hand, primitive, absolutely. And in some ways, it's kind of silly to do a primitive skill with a steel knife. It's silly to carve a primitive bow with a steel knife. But on the other hand, it's kind of silly to carve a primitive bow at all when you've got a bow already. So that could be the plastic rings. And it's actually not that so much that I was dodging them as I was just kind of running straight through them. Again, I'd say I was lazily dodging them. I wasn't, you know, like all ducking, and I was just trying to get through the plastic rings. So it wasn't a scary thing. It's just breaking through the plastic rings mostly.
Those are really good words you just used too. I'd write them down for just for your own benefit. Breaking through, lazily dodging, that's awesome. Well, great. I feel good about this. Do you feel good? Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. I could do it's pretty fun. I could do a lot more dreams. Marathon dream interpretation. It's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. So, and I think this illustrated a lot of like good stuff about it. Dreams. I think like moments. Every time I do a dream interview, I get scared that I've like what is this gonna? Oh, I'm not gonna figure it out, or we're just gonna wallow in some ass. And so I pass over stuff. I've learned to just move on when stuff isn't clicking, and that seems to have worked. And so, yeah, all in all, that's great. So thanks, Penny Scout, for joining me for our guinea pig version of dream interviews for. Dream interpretation for green anarchists and rewilders. It's about time. And hope you guys all enjoyed this. So what a satisfying dream, huh? For Penny, of course, and also for me as an interviewer. I can't emphasize enough, as an interviewer, you're almost the you almost play the role of the village idiot. Your job is to just say the obvious thing over and over and over, to reflect back the obvious thing. There's some skill in that, absolutely. But the skill is in how do I so as closely tow what they just said as possible? How do I find the essence of what maybe this passage from the dream is saying, or what are the little cheats I can do? For example, in the part where Penny talked about swimming, how important was swimming? You know, could I, you know, when there's activities, could you just call them an activity and pass over that? But, you know, as often as not, I've found that, you know, when I think I can go generic sometimes it works, but sometimes no, the dream was specific for a very reason. It doesn't use metaphors randomly. So that's, you know, that is, I think, where the skill is, that it's a skill of figuring out, just getting an intuitive sense of where, when you can talk more generally and not be so specific to the dream, because in the end you're not just repeating the dream back to them. Otherwise Penny would read her dream and then I would read her dream back to her and say, does this remind you of, or I do it sentence by sentence, you know, read a sentence and go, okay, so where in your waking life does this happen? You know, that's obviously not what it is. The dream interview is a game of how can I sort of make this a little more general and a little more ambiguous by retaining the essence of what she's saying, and also by using her words. Because the whole point is we want to figure out her own metaphor set. And and I think the cool moment is the cool moment is when Penny Scout realized that beagles show up in her dreams, and that's a common metaphor. And now, what? That's a word of her dream language.
There it is. She knows when she sees beagles in her dreams that it's probably something to do with primitive skills, living off the land, rewilding, hunting, you know? So that's really cool stuff. There's not much else to say about that. This has been a long episode in any case, and I want to end it as close to an hour and a half as I can. So we'll just stop there. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned a huge amount. I'll remind you again that it's not about figuring out the other person's dream. It's about bouncing back what they're saying so they can figure it out. And that's the skill of the dream interview. This podcast was made possible by donations from Eric and Robert. Thank you so much. And thank you, Penny Scout, for stepping up into the limelight and taking a risk to share your dream. You've been listening to episode 12 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast, recorded on July 14th, 2008, with me, Willem Larson.